You're listening to Star Wars Splash Page Comics in Review.
This is episode number 209, the before the belly busting Thanksgiving Day extravaganza that will permeate the United States. Although, we're just having kale and ham. I don't know about you, Jeff. What are you having?
Geek me all knowing box sets stay open May 4th. I'm hoping you're gonna be hot as before. Cause Ren looks hardcore and I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
Did you say kale and ham?
Yes, don't judge me.
That's it?
Well, I mean, of the other stuff, and probably like biscuits and maybe some mashed potatoes. And, you know. Allie, what else are we going to have for Thanksgiving? Oh, and mac and cheese for Jerry.
Okay. But just kale and ham, it seems not only is it sparse, it's an odd combo.
Again, don't judge.
I'm not judging. I'm just befuddled. Not judging at all. I'm just confused. As far as I know, we're going to meet up with my brother and his wife. We're having the usual spread. I'm making my mom's heart attack potatoes, which they were christened that by my sister-in-law's. My sister-in-law's son, who I don't know what that makes us. I guess that would make me his step-uncle, except he's my age, because my brother's quite a bit older than me, and his wife is older than him, so it's just hash brown casserole.
Oh, that's cool.
But it's hash browns, cheese, heavy cream, butter, and breadcrumbs.
Excellent. And now, does that come with a coupon to the cardiologist, or?
No, but buy two, get one free is what happens here.
All right.
So, but no, that's a, you know, what's interesting, I was going to make some enchiladas Wednesday night, ahead of time just to have Wednesday night, could not find the enchilada sauce that I use. Apparently, it's become a very popular dish to have for Thanksgiving around this area, which makes sense. We've got a larger Latin population.
Oh, well, yeah. No, it does perfect.
So that makes sense. But yes, I'll tell you one thing I'm very thankful for, though, Matt, is your friendship in this podcast and all the people that we've met as a result of the podcast. So there's that.
You got all sentimental on me.
Well, and you know, I want to dedicate this show to Bo.
Oh, Bo Bear. Bo Regard.
Matt had to say goodbye to a buddy, one of the greats.
Yes.
This weekend, and so I do. I want to dedicate this show to Beau Regard.
That's a wonderful idea. The great thing about Beau was, unlike Buddy, he never peed on the fish tank stand.
No, yeah. So, if those of you that don't know, Matt lost his dog, one of his dogs, Beau, over the weekend, and Matt has a history of. First of all, Matt and I both believe in adopting, rescuing, and Matt has a penchant for rescuing older dogs, not necessarily senior dogs, but some senior dogs.
Yeah.
I applaud you for that. I personally can't do it because I get too attached and I need more than, you know, 4 or 5 years with them.
Exactly.
But I do applaud you for that. And it really does. Everything I saw of Bo, he really was one of the greats.
He was truly, truly one of the best. There's a lot of hyperbole about the best dog ever, but,
everybody says their dog is the best and they're right.
This is true. This is true.
I firmly believe that.
This is true. I also do firmly believe that all dogs do go to heaven, that it's no cliche.
Absolutely.
So
if you have time, if you have a fur kid, give them an extra scratch for Bo this week.
Please do. So
now that we've got all that out of the way, let's talk some comics.
Definitely. Well, we got some news. We got the February solicits. At the top of those solicits, missing from the lineup was Dr. Aphra and Bounty Hunters. I know. But Marvel told us directly that not canceled, just, taking February off, sort of catch up on some things, which makes sense, makes a lot of sense given how the pandemic sort of knocked the publishing schedules all around earlier this year. So, but we are told that they will be back in March, which is great.
Excellent.
Yeah, because I was like, no, those are two of our favorite books, so we don't want them to go. But, however, of course, we do have the High Republic number 2. Fans of the Dark Empire comics from Dark Horse, your prayers have been answered. Marvel is reprinting them in an Epic collection.
Now, nice.
Yeah. So I think it makes our discussion of both Dark Empire and Dark Empire 2 even more resonant now. So, yeah, you can look for that book. It looks like it's due out February 24th. And it will collect Dark Empire 1 through 6, Dark Empire 2, 1 through 6, Star Wars Empires End 1 and 2, Star Wars Handbook 1 and 3, and material from Star Wars Tales 8, 11, 16, and 17.
It is an epic collection, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, you know, as a reminder, you know, we'd already talked about this a couple episodes ago, but the Dr. Aphra Omnibus is also coming out February 24th, and that's collecting the entire run of the first series, as well as Darth Vader Volume 1, 3, 4, 8, 21, Star Wars Volume 2, 13, 19, 31, and 32, The Screaming Citadel one-shot, and material from Darth Vader Volume 1, number 25, and of course the Empire Ascendant one-shot that came out. I want to say it was it last year, or was it? I think it was last year. So, but yeah,
I can't remember anymore.
No, it was. It was last year, because when
time is a construct.
When Marvel was winding down everything to make the jump to the era between ESB and Return of the Jedi, they had that one shot that sort of tied everything in together. But also, IDW also released its confirmation publishing date for the launch of its High Republic series, The High Republic Adventures. And that will be out on February 3rd with issue number 1. So
it's a good issue to start with.
Yeah. And of course, if you look at our Facebook page or the Twitter feed, you know, we've got covers. We've had some, you know, some previous internal pages from that issue as well. And, you know, so we've got, you know, Daniel Jose Older is writing. Harvey Talabau is handling the art and the main cover. Rebecca Nalty is handling the colors as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be a variant cover by Yale Nathan, whom I like a lot. And of course, speaking of Marvel Star Wars comics, Darth Vader number 7 is getting a second printing, so you can look for that on January 6th. So that's a pretty big deal for them, because the Darth Vader books are going into second printing, which means that the demand is there. And last, but certainly not least, Viz is publishing a manga adaptation of Greg Recko's Guardians of the Wills book about Baze and Chirrut from Rogue One.
Yes, I saw that we had shared that. I'm very, very excited about that. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can't wait for that, because I really like that book. And of course, as you know, those two are probably among my most favoritist characters. And I firmly do believe that we should get an actual original miniseries about the two of them, because I love their character dynamic. And last but not least, add us to another venue, as you know, as well as other Marvin Dog Media podcasts. We can now be found on the Audible app starting today, which is November 23rd. So, and I just looked, because we're there. So check us out, if you know, it gives you another option to listen to us.
And just further proof that you cannot get away from us.
We are inevitable.
And before we move on, Matt, I saw someone ask a question on our Facebook page, so I wanted to give you a chance to answer here in case people didn't see it. Someone asked, what determines if a book goes into a second, third, fourth printing? Can you give us some insight on that?
It varies from book to book, but usually it's demand. Because the way the direct comic book market is, there's a reason, like when we list the solicits, we put the final order cutoff. That's, you know, when you're supposed to let your comic book shop know by a certain date, yeah, I would like a copy of this book. So they know to order it for you. And then, you know, the publishers take a look at the orders through Diamond. And then, you know, that's how many books they sort of deliver, you know, obviously, you know, a little more than anticipated. And, you know, if people discover that, oh, I really like this book a lot, you know, and they're out of copies, then they'll go to a second printing, because, you know, they know that there's a lot of demand for that. This has a couple of reactionary effects, though. One, it means that, they didn't carefully read the demand for a book. And two, the second printings tend to be in smaller runs. So sometimes collectors add a little more value to them because there's fewer copies of them.
Interesting.
Yeah, good case in point would have in this was last year's The Rise of Kylo Ren miniseries. Every issue went to a first and second printing, and I believe all but one. I may be wrong. Carlos over at he could probably tell me. He could probably correct us. He could probably correct me on this on the spot were he here. But I think all but one went to a third printing. So,
and in that scenario, you spoke to the fact that it points to the publishers not correctly gauging demand. When you do it with every single issue of a miniseries, are they already locked into a print run when they start that 5 to 6 issue series, or could they have upped the print run for issue 3, 4, and 5 once they saw how big the demand was and they just chose not to do so?
It varies. You know, they're usually operating 3 to 4 months out. You know, so
like, it's possible they could have been almost done with the series before they realized, oh, we've got a hit on our hands. We better
literally and get you know, these back and, out. And you know, and a lot of people didn't. You know, I mean, we're among them. We did not realize how popular the Kylo Ren miniseries was going to be.
Right.
But, you know, but then again, you know, it came out, you know, the first issue came out before The Rise of Skywalker, you know, and then we had, you know, 2, 3, and 4 follow, you know, all before the pandemic struck, you know, same with the Darth Vader. I mean, you know, people have been really gravitating toward this third volume of Darth Vader, you know, because it's so deftly melding events from the prequel trilogy, the original trilogy, and of course, as we saw in the last issue, you know, the sequel trilogy. And so there's a real demand for it. People want to read it.
All right. Well, thank you for that little insight into the world of comics publishing. Like I said, I saw the question. I was like, yeah, it's probably a good one for us to discuss on the show on mic. So
it's definitely something that's really interesting. And you know, it's, you know, sometimes you know, one thing that really drives a particular issue could be the introduction of a new character.
Right,
because comics are all about PR and hype, and so you know if word leaks out that a new character is going to be debuting or something, I mean, you know, a good case in point was DC Comics. They had a character called Punchline, who is the daughter of the Joker, and once people realized what it was, you know, I mean, those issues were gone,
flying off the shelves.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, like my local shop is very smart. You know, they put a policy in. You know, they first, you know, when they get their books, they fill their customers' pull lists first. But they also, you know, they read the tea leaves, so they know if there's hot demand for a book, they're going to limit how many books get sold. Because otherwise you'll have somebody walk in and buy, like, all 40 copies and then turn around and try to flip them on eBay.
Right, which is a horrible thing to do anyway.
Oh, it is. It totally is. You know, the scalpers, you know, are scum. Just
yes,
truly and totally.
Agreed.
So, but, you know, but sometimes, you know, you luck out. I mean, there was, if you'll recall earlier this year in Star Wars Volume 3, we saw Verla encountering Luke Skywalker. And then, you know, all of a sudden demand for that issue that she appeared in last year skyrocketed. You know, so, you know, what was a $3.99 comic, you know, is now being sold for $20 or more.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, Darth Vader Volume 1, Number 3, which had the first appearance of Dr. Aphra, it's starting to go crazy.
Oh, well, and as it should.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Yeah.
Especially with, you know, that vibe coming about a possible TV show. So, you know, it's like the last I saw, I think it traded, you know, an unslabbed copy in pretty, you know, really good condition. It was going for like 90, you know, sold for $90.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And then there's like, you know, like the variant cover. It was a 1 in 25 variant that's going for like $400. It's nuts. You know,
so there you have it, folks. If you've got a Dr. Aphra book, hang on to it. It might be like printing money.
No, it won't be like printing money, but just, you know what? Hang on and enjoy it because you enjoy it. So
exactly. Read it and have fun.
If you're, you know, if you're one of those, if you think, you know, that, hey, this comic is going to be hot and I'm going to put my kid through college. Well, I've got one word for you, the 1990s.
So, yep.
So
speaking of books that we enjoyed reading, we do have two books to discuss. We have Star Wars Adventures Volume 2 from IDW, and we have Dr. Aphra Volume 2?
Volume 2, Number 6.
Number 6. Let's start with Star Wars Adventures, give it, folks, just a quick rundown. And we're not doing in-depth reviews of these unless somebody starts requesting them, because, you know, there's a lot of times not as much going on in them thematically. They're just fun stories, which is not always the case.
And
we do have some themes in this one that we deal with.
Plus, we also, you know, eventually the Padawans will gather again, and you know, we want to get, you know, that's, and it's great fun to go deep in depth
don't want to, yeah, don't want to take over from their purview.
Exactly. And
so this is Star Wars Adventures issue number 2.
Mm-hmm. Volume 2, number 2. So, and a bit of a delay on this book, but it's finally out. and that's to be understand. That's to be understood, given that, you know, IDW has been undergoing some tumult lately in terms of leadership and positions, but hasn't affected the quality of this book. Just first off, a raft of amazing covers here.
Yes.
Unfortunately, one of the covers that had been solicited was by Miguel Evans of, and it featured Darth Maul. Not part of issue number 2 now. Hopefully that cover will come back around, though. But, you know, the main cover is by Francesco Francavilla, and as always, a wonderful one. David Tinto has got just a stalwart cover featuring Kylo Ren and his shuttle with the First Order behind him that is just truly amazing. And then, of course, there's... oh, my gosh. We've got, let me get over here just to make sure that I get the names pronounced correctly, because I don't want to mispronounce them. But let's see, scroll. Here we go. Livio Ramondelli did a retail exclusive for Devil
Dog. This is my favorite of all of them.
He did a retail exclusive for Devil Dog Comics of Kylo with his saber thrust into the ground. It looks to be, you know, obviously Mustafar, and above him in the clouds or the sky is, you know, the Vader's burnt helmet, and
I love it so much. I would have that as a print on my wall.
Oh, it's amazing. It's truly astounding. So, and if you've been a good boy, you might find it under your tree this year, Jeff.
Oh,
maybe. If you've been a good boy, I got to check with folks to make sure you've been okay.
Right. So. And then we have one other cover.
I'm sorry. Yeah. And then this was another retail exclusive for Scott's Collectibles by Elizabeth Milton. Again, that shows Kylo Ren. This time,
really looks like a dynamic image of him as well.
Yeah. And it looks like he's on Starkiller Base, you know, given the snowy white background. So, but yeah, that's pretty awesome as well. But again, since those are retailer exclusives, you can only get them from, you know, those two stores. You can't go down to your local comic shop and get it. So, but I digress, because let's move on to the meat of the book. Okay. Again, like all Star Wars adventures, two stories, a main feature and a backup feature. The first feature is, of course, by Michael Moretzi, whom we know, art by Ilias Kyriazis. Colors by Charlie Kirchhoff and letters by Jake M. Wood. The second feature, which is focused on Kylo Ren, is written by Sam Maggs, who is making her Star Wars comics debut. So congratulations to you, Sam. Welcome to the fold.
Announces her presence with authority.
Very,
I'll say.
Very much so.
It's a Bull Durham reference for anybody who's listening.
Definitely her debut. It will not be her last Star Wars comic story, that's for sure. Art by David Tinto, colors by Rebecca Nalty, and again, letters by Jake Wood. The assistant editor for both stories is Riley Farmer, and the editor is Elizabeth Bry. For Lucasfilm, we have Robert Simpson, senior editor, Michael Siglane, creative director, Phil Shostak from the Lucasfilm art department, and from the story group, we've got Matt Martin, Pablo Hidalgo, and Emily Shkukani. The first story, it's The Obstacle Course Part 2. If you will recall, when last we left, Finn and Poe had been captured by pirates on this planet where they had set up an obstacle course to help Rey do Jedi training. And essentially, this is what this story does, is it rolls us what's going on here, you know, with Finn and Poe trying to make their escape, and Rey realizing it, no, it's going to be up to her to save them. But you know, but before she can, she's got to dodge pirates themselves, who are shooting at her and BB-8, and Rey is tapping into her not latent but just raw powerful force ability here, and it's so whimsically drawn, and I you know, but not so whimsical that you lose touch with the story. And I think that's a real credit to Ilias here. And the colors are vibrant and verdant. And so I definitely want to single out Charlie Kirchhoff for his color work here.
Absolutely. And the main bad guy, I can't remember his name. Let's see.
Let's see here.
Lannix.
Yeah, it's Lannix. There you go.
Looks like the Joker from The Killing Joke.
He does, doesn't he?
To me, yeah.
Yeah,
so I'm glad it's not just me.
I mean, he looks very ominous, very, you know, he's got the kind of a mohawk, but you have the very really long ponytail.
It's more of a, yeah, it's almost a faux hawk, except yeah. He doesn't have any hair around it.
Yeah, which reminds me, I have to shave the hair around my mohawk. Because the hair is
you do. It's like a quarter But speaking of, you were talking about the colors. I love the way his outfit, this green, it's very 80s action figure looking.
It is, isn't it, though? It's almost like something we would see in an Ewoks or a Droids cartoon.
Or the Droids, yeah. That's exactly who he looks like. Looks like a character from one of those shows, which I loved.
That was a great show. That show gets overlooked, and it shouldn't. So, but yeah, no, and I think part of that is on purpose, or at least by design, given that this is an all ages book. But again, with what Michael Moretti has been writing here, this is an all ages book that, you know, is much like the Star Wars Annual 2020 we discussed last week, is kind of veering over into a little older all ages.
Yes.
But not so much that, you know, it's inappropriate for like a 6-year-old or a 10-year-old. So and I like that a lot. And again, you know, Denton J. Tipton, the former managing editor of IDW, had said that when they decided to relaunch Star Wars Adventures, they did want to keep that all ages purview, but they also wanted to dive a little deeper into some of these stories, you know, to make them a little more, I don't want to say adult oriented, but a little more mature.
Right. Age with their audience, I think. Maybe.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great way of looking at it, actually. Yeah.
But and so we see, you know, Finn works his way out of their restraints, and got to wonder if he's using the Force to do that, because we sort of it has been confirmed that Finn, what he was going to tell Rey was that he was Force sensitive.
And I still maintain that is something that should have been explored.
I agree. Absolutely. I really
do. So, I'm not here to debate the Rise of Skywalker or the entire sequel trilogy, but I always felt that, you know, even from watching The Force Awakens, that, you know, there was more to Finn than met the eye.
Exactly. And I wish we had seen more of it. Luckily, the character is still alive in the universe, so we can explore some of that, at least in comic book form.
Exactly.
Which I think we're doing here. And you know, this Rey racing away from everyone and help BB-8 having to help him along the way is a lot of fun. And we've got an attempted coup among the bad guys with Lannix, you know, sort of taking over from the older man there. And we get a Mexican standoff, and that's just in time for Finn and Poe to make their move and get the drop on everyone. Yes. At least they thought. And then they have to run off. Have to RUNNOFT to quote. Man, that's two movie references in 5 minutes. I gotta slow down.
Actually, it seems to me that you're kind of off your game here. I would have expected 3 or 4.
Well, I'm trying to pace myself. It's my Thanksgiving gift to the listeners.
There you go.
But so they're working out their own plan, trying to Poe and Finn are, and then Rey, of course, shows up and saves them all.
And
she says, "You see, BB-8, I told you we'd catch up to them."
And I love that. I mean, because this is just Rey standing tall, you know, on top of the
hero pose. Yeah,
yeah, the true hero pose. I mean, just, you know, with the fist clenched, you know, up there, it's her, get her, you know, and just some amazing gymnastic reactions here by Rey, you know, and of course BB is just this rolling blur, and just, I mean, the lettering here by Jake, it's just, you know, the wham, the clang. Yeah, you know, it's just you really feel the onomatopoeia throughout.
Absolutely.
All of this.
Well, and the art, when she hits him where that clang is, I mean, I can feel that in my teeth.
Oh yeah, it's like, oh gosh, I feel like I've been sucker punched. So it's just solidly, you know, it's kinetic.
My favorite of the onomatopoeic references we have here is where Lannix says, "Get her, Tazo," and he says, "What?" as his gun gets shot out of his hand and you get a spatang.
Which is awesome.
That's great. I'd love to know how much freedom they have with those words, how much freedom they have to use to get creative with that. And so Poe has shot his gun out of his hand. And of course, Rey gets him, overtakes Lannix, and Of course, you know, Finn tries to play it off. You know, thanks to the assist, Ray, who would have thought this moon would be crawling with pirates? Says, I don't know, maybe the people who thought it was a good idea to make a Jedi obstacle course here. Says, well, and of course, you know, Lannix starts monologuing. You think you've won the second night you leave. I'm going to contact the First Order. I don't care if it does cost me my base, anything to make sure you they're on you before you can even. And I love that Ray just knocks him over. He says, oh, really? And how are you going to do that with your long-range comms disabled? So, well, fine, forget it.
You win.
And we win and they take off, yeah. And R2 is talking to Ray. She says, I am very happy that you all tried to help me train. And Finn says, but was the obstacle course too hard? Because I thought it was pretty great. And both as Jedi worthy, that's how I describe it. They're really full of themselves. And he says, I mean, sure, General Organa sets up some good ones too for you, but she says, yeah, let's just say yours was different. But you know what? From now on, I think it's best to leave the Jedi training to Master Leia.
Yes, and I love that term. I love seeing that in print, Master Leia. So,
and I love that last panel as they're zooming off. Like you said, the colors are just wonderful.
They're amazing colors. It's just truly amazing. Now we get into the backup story. And just, you know, for a note to the listeners, when we say backup, it is in no way saying that it should be, you know, referred to as, oh, it wasn't good enough to be the front of the book. That's not the case at all. It's just, you know, we get two stories and that's just,
it is backed up to the front.
Exactly. This is just, it's just a term. It's just, hey, it's the backup story. You know, it's the second story. And this one is just, Sam, you know, again, Sam Maggs has got a great debut here with a character profile of Kylo Ren. Not Ben Solo. This is pure Kylo Ren. I mean,
just, Supreme Leader Kylo Ren.
Yeah, not what I would have chosen for myself. Master of the Dark Side, perhaps. Commander of the Knights of Ren. But this is where I have landed. And now it sounds right. Just head of the First Order. My word unchallenged. So much to do now. Yet also somehow so very little. And it's almost like, you know, we're starting this first page and it's just a sort of a pay on to just another day at the office.
So, you know, right.
The daily grind is the supreme leader of the First Order.
Some people pursue greatness. Some people have greatness thrust upon them.
You know, and just, you know, and of course, you know, he's got all the toadies, you know, because they have given him full allegiance. You know, if there's anything else we can do for you, Supreme Leader, get out of my sight.
Yes, Supreme Leader, right away, Supreme Leader.
Scurry away.
All these little lackeys. And he says, and my will, well, it is easily enforceable as he walks out on this platform in front of everybody.
Yeah. And just, you know, he's got his data pad. He just crunches it.
Smashes it.
And it's just interesting because, you know, it's a testament. But it's also an examination of, are they bowing to Kylo Ren himself or to the Supreme Leader?
Yeah, the position, yeah, the title or the man.
Yeah, and you can tell, and Sam Maggs does a really good job of doing this. And, you know, with the way she's writing it, but I would love to see her script because you can tell that David Tennant here has taken every genuflection that she probably had in her notes and brought it to full glorious life. And Rebecca Nolte's color work here, especially, like, you know, when we're on this planet, we see all these different species, you know, different shades, different colors, different hues. And it just blends together like a well-woven tapestry. And that's what this, you know, this story is very impressive to me because this story is very martial, Martial, and very imperious. And that has to do, I think, with a lot with how David and Rebecca are translating what Sam has written.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And it is, it's basically an inner monologue. And, you know, we see people bowing and we see him. He says, soon the galaxy will know the true power of the First Order. And they will be grateful, as they should be. You know, very authoritarian, very...
Well, it's very Darth Vader-ish. It's very,
very
Sith.
Vader-ish, yes.
It's very Sith. And it's funny because it says, I enjoy the simplicity of it all. Like my grandfather before me, I lead, they follow. You know, and you know, when he says they follow, he's got his hand up, you know, just gesticulating like a martial leader. And then that's when we see in the crowd, now! Boom! You know, rebels. And he sees them, and of course, you know, wait, this is not how this goes. You know, and then he's got to wheel the First Order troopers into combat to bring them down. And we get a litany of the First Order. You know, the First Order demands instant obedience. I demand instant obedience. This girl shows defiance in the face of the Supreme Leader. And that, I think, in and of itself angers him beyond compare. And he's got his blade out and he's slicing and dicing, doing his, patented, pound to the ground maneuvers. She must have a death wish. Lucky for her, the First Order can grant all manner of wishes, and he's chasing her down. And then she has the wherewithal and the verve, at least in Kylo Ren's mind, to question him. Because we get to the scene where he's got her cornered, and she's like, whoa. So, here to kill me then. Try it. Is that what you want? No, you idiot. I'm the idiot. You're the one fighting back when you could live under the greatest regime in the galaxy. Death is absolutely not the harshest punishment. You must know such contempt is subject to the harshest punishment. He says, you must know that such contempt is subject to the harshest punishment. She retorts,
death is absolutely not the harshest punishment. He's just spoken like a real radical. Explain that and be quick about it. And she, basically tells him her story.
But and this is great because, he's pausing and he shuts down his lightsaber. So, she knows that she has his attention, but she's very, very wisely still has her gun up, like you said, we get this, we get her story. The world you're threatening into submission would rather die free than live under your fascist rule. Afraid to fight back? Are you prepared to die for the Order, Ren? And he's like, you could not harm me. And now you and all your people will suffer. Was it worth it? And she goes, if only one other planet hears of what we've done and decides to follow our lead, then yeah, it'll all be worth it. And he says, you're a fool and you'll regret this. And then he walks away. He leaves her.
And he's saying to himself, enough, and she's yelling, the future belongs to the people, and he says, I've heard enough, and sicks the stormtroopers on her.
Yep.
And that's the last we hear of it. He says, Supreme Leader, we have gained control over this. He says, good. We will see that they're due. He doesn't even let the guy finish.
Yeah. And then we get his inner monologue as he boards the shuttle and they take off. It would never have ended any other way. Ideals, morals, what are they worth to her now? To them now. I am Supreme Leader of the First Order, whether I wanted it or not. I lead the galaxy. And I wonder if there will be anyone left to follow. That's where we get the end. And so what Sam has written here is essentially, the view of the First Order from both sides. The pro from the side of the First Order to the con of the people like, we don't want to be under your boot.
Right.
And she's done so in a very engaging way.
She has, and she's captured Kylo Ren's voice by way of Adam Driver perfectly.
She has. Oh my gosh, yeah. She has. Yeah.
It's really amazing. So I can't wait to see more of what she's going to bring to us.
But again, I have to reiterate, she has captured Kylo Ren's voice, not Ben Solo's voice. And that can be hard to do because, at no point in this story did I once think, oh, look, Ben is coming through. No.
No, not at all. This is all, he's behind the mask, so he is Kylo Ren and in true, split personality fashion.
Oh, yeah. So it was really good.
Really was. I enjoyed it. And I also enjoyed Dr. Aphra.
Oh my goodness! We got a new art team. Got a new cover artist. Got a new arc. And it's the engine job headhunted, and this main cover is by Lionel Yu.
Great, great cover. We've got Domina Tag in the background with Aphra, and I'm assuming that Sonostaros fighting one another as they fall down.
Totally Sonostaros. So immediate buy for me right then and there. There's a great variant cover by Jen Bartel, which I ordered because I had to, because it's Jen Bartel. So check that one out if you can get a copy of it. We got new art. The creative team, of course, we have Alyssa Wong is our writer. We have on the pencils, we have Ray Anthony Height and Robert Gill. On inks, we have Victor Olazaba. On colors, we do have Rochelle Rosenberg. And letters, we have Virtual Calligraphies, Joe Caramagna. And then the graphic designer is Carlos Lau. The assistant editor on the book is Tom Groneman. The editor is Mark Panizia. And then again, for Lucasfilm, we have Robert Simpson, Michael Sigling, Troy Alders, who's the art director. And then, of course, Phil Shostak from the art department. And, of course, from the story group, as before, Matt Martin, Pablo Hidalgo, and Emily Shukani. New arc means new characters. And so I really appreciate the way that Carlos Lau has designed this, you know, sort of title page, you know, because we get a quick summary of the first arc. And then we get basically a cast list, which is Aphra, Just Lucky, Lady Domina Taga, and Karek.
Who looks like a praying mantis.
Yeah, it reminds me of, I want to say, Alan Dean Foster had a bunch of novels where they had giant insects. So then they were called Thranks.
Thranks, okay.
Yeah, and then Star Frontiers, the old TSR role-playing. I'm really showing my age here. Oh my gosh. Had the Vrusk, which were also an insectoid race.
Now, I have heard of the Vrusk, so...
Yeah, well, that's from the old Star Frontiers RPG from the early 80s. So, I mean, you know, and of course, Star Wars itself has never shied away from insectoid species. I mean...
Not at all. In fact, in the... Was it the second episode of the Mandalorian this season?
Exactly.
There was an ant creature. Incidentally, that episode was directed by Peyton Reed, who directed the Ant-Man movies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I did not either until I looked it up. I was like, oh.
Okay. Well, there's also because, I mean, you know, if you'll recall, like in The Force Awakens, I believe it was the Kulaceto that we saw, you know, in Maz Kanata's castle.
Right. So it's not unheard of.
Yeah, it is. There's definitely, you know, and of course, Genosians are somewhat insectoidal. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm totally thrilled to see this.
So the story opens with Aphra in an airlock, saying, "I can't feel my legs." And this is Karek says, "Awake already? The neurotoxin must be wearing off. Behavior, I'll jettison you out the airlock." She says, "Why do people love tossing me out of airlocks?" And Lucky is revealed to be on the other side in the main cabin with Karek, and he says, "That sounds like a question you might need to ask yourself, Doc." And he's absolutely right.
He is. And, you know, I really like, you know, Karek's dialogue here. Just because it's just, you know, he knows he's got Aphra between a rock and a hard place. I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say, I wonder if Karek is a Verpine.
Sure. Till somebody proves otherwise.
Well, I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, it could, you know, I don't think it's a Killick because, you know, the character Karek is a little too bipedal, if you will. So,
right.
So.
And so Aphra tells Lucky, he says, "I think you do a good air toss too." He says, "Oh, let's not get nasty." And then Karek just takes control. He says, "Both of you shut up. We've arrived." And Aphra looks out and says, "Oh no." And again, you're talking about the new art team. You know, this Aphra is a slightly different Aphra than we've seen. Still looks like her.
Yeah.
But some of her features are a little more defined now. And she says, "Oh no." And we open up to Tag Space. And this ship that looks like one of those VHS cassette rewinders you used to have back in the 80s.
Now you're really showing your age, dude.
Yeah. I got one of those for Christmas/Valentine's Day one year. My mom had a habit of every year she would buy my brother and I both Christmas presents, and she would buy us both each one of some item, and she would put it up to hide and then would never find it. And then she would find it when she started doing her cleaning after Christmas, and then we would get it at Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So that was a Christmas/Valentine's gift one year for me. So yeah, I'm showing my age a little bit.
That's okay.
But he says only a fool keeps Domina Tag waiting.
And finally, you know, we get, you know, we've seen Domina Tag and, you know, and we saw her, you know, a couple of panels in the last issue. Of course, we saw her on the cover. Love that they are staying true to how she appeared in Marvel Star Wars Volume 1. You know, just, you know, a little more refined, you know, the flowing red hair, the luxurious gown coverall. But, you know, we see her just in control of the TAGA, you know, business, and just, you know, we shut down, you know, we go back to like a, almost like a flashback.
We don't know exactly how far before, because the Inquisitor tag space before, and Inquisitor is an interesting name for the ship.
Well, I think it's a perfect name because, you know, the TAGAs are all about commerce and making money and controlling things. So this, you know, to me, it's the perfect name because it's an Enterprise ship. So, and of course, you know, you can't use Enterprise.
Right.
So, but yeah. And of course, you know, she's being attended to by her toadies, wage disputes, you know, and, you know, because, you know, she's checking all the holo feeds, you know, wage disputes on the eighth day of strikes on the lunar colony. And then, of course, you know, Lady Domina, the leaders of Arva Pars say they're ready to negotiate. Don't send a reply. Let them question their offer. By tomorrow, they'll take 20% off their asking price.
And this is a master negotiator who knows that sometimes the best negotiation is none at all.
And she is, you know, very deftly juggling several, you know, pressing business needs at all at the same time, you know. And he says, you know, the colony on Gortus 4 has just signed over their rights to their moon. Good. Tell the construction division I want the ore factory up and running within the week. What accounts for this drop in the Hadi system? The Darman Syndicate attacked one of our supply ships yesterday. Word must have spread. Have a battleship cut them off at the Ferrier Junction. Take out their engines and weapons. After a day, have them pushed into the sun. That's a Tarkin move, by the way.
It is, and I don't think most of this information is not necessarily important, but what is important is setting up this character and telling us just how ruthless and cutthroat and brutal she is.
Yes, very much so, because she, you know, yeah, I mean, she may not wield a gun, but she, you know, knows how to destroy.
Well, and how unsentimental, because the next page he says, of course, ma'am, one more matter in regard to your nephew Ronan. And we see a covered body being brought past.
Yes.
And she says, I didn't wish to speak of my nephew now. He says, my apology, Ladies Domina. Is that all? She has one final matter lapping. And then we have our next story is coming in from the, and I love, we got the Holo news feed coming in. She says, have the local bondsman put out word for a new bounty. and I just noticed the second time through was when I noticed this inset of here's the technology, ghost of technology past, and how Direct Industries promises the future is well alive on the scene. And we see this device that she shows at the end of the book.
It's almost like a technological Baba Yaga hut.
Yeah.
And of course, spoiler, we will find out that this is a Nile technology. Nile, of course, being the villains in the High Republic, which starts in January.
And probably purposefully reminiscent of nihilism and nihilists.
Oh, totally. So again, a nice little seed here for the High Republic, you know, taking advantage of that synergy amongst the various media.
Yes. Get a nice scene of Sifak, who is, I guess, the person who handles all the bounties. We see that the bounty coming out is Dr. Aphra, but I like on his screen, if you look, you can see
Valance
the Hunter, and looks like a Cobra Firebat, and maybe is that...
I wonder if that's Bossk down at the bottom.
Could be. And it also looks like... I can't remember which January Jones's character from X-Men First Class, the one that can turn herself into crystal diamond or whatever.
Oh yeah. Emma Frost.
Yeah. Emma Frost.
So, and of course, you know, he's of course, Sifak here is sporting the Lobot headgear. So, and this is a pretty big bounty, you know, cause he calls out to everybody, you know,
20,000 credits. Yeah.
Including whom, you know, we saw at the beginning of the book here, you know, with Karak. 25,000 credits for Dr. Shelley Aphra alive. Now let's go make some money. So, and then that's where we see how Aphra has gotten into the position because, you know, almost now RV station, you know, the bounty, the word is out and she's being chased, you know, she's being chased by Twi'leks, you know, and she's got Black K with her. This is great because it's, oh, come on. First the ambush on Taurus, then Burn and Khan. Now this, what the hell happened? So, you know, and the Hunters are like, no, no need to be so coy. Come on, play, Aphra. No, thanks. I've already made that mistake once. She's just, you know, and they're not holding back, but in a sense they are because they know, watch it. We need her alive. Black K, why are you? Oh, Kark. Come on, Black K, buddy. We got a good thing going. Don't throw it all away for a couple hundred credits. Roar. Okay, fair. That's a lot of money. And then I love that Wookiee is blocking my shot. Then go through him, Jeffa. And hurry. The Hollath quadruplets just touched down outside, and they're going to want a piece of the action.
So they just shoot Black K. I guess they stun him. And she uses that, and of course, it makes him mad, so she uses that as her distraction. She says, you really should buy me dinner before you decide that. She says, because they say, go get your own mark. This one's ours. So she runs out, and she runs through the quadruplets. She says, out of the way. And I said, wait, that's Aphra. Stop her. And she's running out. She says, when life gives you speeders, you say thank you. And so they take off after her, and she's and I love her goggles and everything. I really wish that we could get like a mini rig of set of Aphra with this speeder, because I really like this design.
It's a great design too. I really dig that a lot.
Looks vaguely like a Sea-Doo or something like that, like a jet ski.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. And she says, they're fast. If they keep pushing their speeder bikes like that, and then the engine's on fire. Put it out. The fuel regulator's bound to overheat, especially if it's missing the cooling rod. So,
and I want to
she had time to sabotage theirs.
Oh, she always does. And I want to take a moment here to single out Rochelle's coloring here, her color artistry, because not only is she is she encapsulating the patina from the fire and the smoke and the flame, but the way she is coloring the exteriors of this city, from a mottled gray to a mottled green to almost like a sea foam green here, it really helps give a lot of style and substance to this chase. And then of course the way she colors Aphra, from her goggles with the red hue, and we can still see her eyes, to the way her signature vest still has that nice bright red burnish.
Yes, you're absolutely right, and it really does give this and it gives this section kind of its own, almost a dreamlike quality.
It does, and of course Joe Caramagna's lettering here, the shoom kaboom, and then
she gets blown off because Jess Lucky shoots at her as she gets getting away.
Oh, and I love how we're introduced to that, because it's the bottom right panel, and it's just we see a gun with a telescoping with a scope on it. Not yet. Bang! Whoa! Kaboom! Pow. I got her. Just south of the night market. Don't leave without me.
So she stands up. Speeder scrapped. I guess I'll... Ouch, what the hell? A dart? Oh, Kark.
So she knows...
She's trying to make fetch a thing, and I'm not sure it's going to catch on, but...
No, it's Kark. I wonder if she knows it's Kark. Because that must be Kark's method, his modus operandi.
Didn't she say Kark earlier with Chrysanthemum?
Did she? Hold on, let me look. Let's see here. Black K.
Yeah, she says, oh, Kark, when she's looking at him.
Oh, you're right. Okay. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, so it says, like, what is the exclamation they're using in The Mandalorian?
Finnick Dang or something?
Yeah,
or?
Finnick Dang. It's sort of that sort of thing. They're throwing stuff to the wall to see what sticks.
Wait, there's more than one Mandalorian episode? I thought there was just the one.
No, there's several. And so that's where we meet Carrick. He says, neurotoxin, not fatal, but unpleasant. We're going on a little trip together, and I need you compliant. And she says, you recognize Jeffa and Uli and Ariel and the quadruplets, but I have no idea who you are. He says, me? And I love the way you were talking about the lettering. The lettering gets smaller and smaller. And then we have just a completely black panel. He says, I'm someone who's about to be very rich. And we're finally caught up to now. This is now.
Which is a great place to be. Yeah, now we're back aboard the Inquisitor. Aphra's being, taken on board. Again, it's like a business meeting. Welcome, Mr. Kark, Mr. Lucky, Dr. Aphra, if you'll follow me.
this guy is
Lapin is the perfect administrative assistant here.
He is. But
Lady Domina will see you in her office. And of course, just like, and the money shall be transferred to your accounts upon delivery of the package. Your consulting services. Are much appreciated, Mr. Lucky. As for your contract with Mr. Ronan, well, we can discuss that at a later date.
Lady Domina, your guests have arrived. I see. Thank you. I've been expecting you. And this panel at the top of the next page where it's all whited out except where they are.
And I love that because it just bleeds in and we get, you know, and she's coming down from a dais. Do you know who I am, Dr. Aphra? Of course. I mean, she's truly stunned. You're Domina Taga, the Domina Taga, head of the Taga Corporation, one of the galaxy's richest, I mean, most esteemed conglomerates. And, and what else am I to you, Aphra?
Under her breath, the end of the guy whose penthouse I blew up.
And then just the look in the background where Lucky looks at laughing. Yikes.
Yikes.
But yet the look on Aphra's face here.
She's sort of smug, sort of proud of herself.
I'm here for this.
and so Domina says, your reputation precedes you. She says, I can explain the penthouse thing. It wasn't exactly an accident, but it wasn't not an accident. And he says, the real culprit, if you ask me, is the faulty wiring in that disintegration chamber of his. And she says, I didn't hire bounty hunters to bring me a disintegration chamber, Aphra. I sent them to find you. She says, right, bounty hunters like this guy with his fancy darts full of neurotoxins, or not so full, as it were.
Are you bunk? Me. And then, you know, Aphra, of course, thinks she's got everything under control. Don't move. Don't even breathe in my direction. And she's looking at Just Lucky. And then she looks at the Domina. I understand you're a very busy woman, Domina, so let's get to business. You must want me alive for some reason, or I'd be dead already. I'd love to think it's for my charm and good looks, but I'll bet you want me to steal something for you. Astute, and the look on Domina's face here captures it perfectly, because she's not at all bothered by this, because she knows that she's still in control. And Aphra thinks she's in control, but she's not. You know, then let's talk terms. Lappin, escort Just Lucky outside. I would have some privacy. But ma'am, now? Yes, ma'am. And then just the way this page is set up with the four, equal size panels going from top to bottom, just basically showing them doing their discussions. It's just no bodyguards. Honestly, I'm not sure if I'm flattered or disappointed. I mean, what's to stop me from doing thwip, click, what? Shoom. And then Domina looks at her. Unless you want to see how a blaster bolt ricochets in an enclosed space, I would settle down. It won't pass through that ray shield, but I imagine it would pass through you several times.
And then she figures out she can't breathe. I'm not sure how I feel about the way her face is drawn, Aphra's face is drawn on this next panel.
I like how it's drawn on this panel because she's having flashbacks to Vader. Vader was, and so I can completely understand why she's like this, because A, she's panicking. B, she can't breathe. C, she's, she's got, it's almost like she's having some PTSD.
She absolutely is. And like I said, I don't hate it. I'm just not sure how I feel. Because if I glanced at this and I didn't know who I was looking at, I might not know it was Aphra.
Oh, that's
my own.
Yeah, that's fair. But at the same time, I think it's important because we need to have that sort of comedic effect, or at least that vivid illustrative effect of what's going on here.
Right. And you're absolutely right. She says, I can't breathe the air in here. It's being sucked out. And this is where we get the flashback to It's Just Like Him. And she's floating in space with Vader's outline in the stars. That's a great panel.
Herb panel.
And Tag says, Ronan's mistake was underestimating you. Yours is underestimating me. And she's panicking. And finally, she lets her out. She says, now, why don't you have a seat? Let's talk terms.
And then, of course, Aphra realizes. And then Domina lays it all out. You're right. I didn't bring you here to kill you. Blowing up my nephew isn't a motivation for revenge. It was a job interview, and you passed with flying colors. Wow. What kind of job are we talking here exactly? Read this. Are you familiar with Daruit Industries? And that's where we find out what this no way. Is that a path engine?
And it's the item that we saw before on the news report.
Yeah, it's the high-tech Baba Yaga hut here. That's a Nile design or a Neil design. We'll see how it's current. We'll have to ask Kevin or Michael Sigalane or Charles Soule how they're pronouncing it.
Yeah, I would say Nile, but I could go either way.
Yeah.
And Domina says, well, that's why I'm hiring you. So-and-so claims that this artifact holds the key to a long-lost, incredibly fast method of light-speed travel, and he's found a way to replicate it. If that's true, it could completely change the galactic economy, or end the war once and for all. Both would be financially ruinous to the Taga dynasty. I cannot allow either to happen. And this, just typical war profiteers here. Worried about their bottom line instead of instead of progress. And so she says Ariadne is due to unveil a technology sooner at an expo. Before then, find out what that device is, where it came from, and if it works. and Aphra's just staring at it. Aren't you a pretty baby?
Because this is very much appealing to Aphra, of course, you know, as an archaeologist. You know, this is something from the
right.
past.
Right, she's so easily distracted. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She says, I can do that, but I've got some conditions. I'm bringing someone with me and not one of your goons. No one who's backstabbed me lately. A professional I can trust. Or trust-ish. And Dominus says, such a person exists. And we cut to Corellia, the Volt Cobra. And Aphra says, she might. And we get basically a hero pose of Sonostaros walking off the ship.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So.
So nice tease for next time. And we get, you know, the cover for next time is Aphra and Sana back to back. So yeah, this is going to be fun. This is going to be a fun arc.
Yep. And it's a bit of a wait because, you know, this issue was supposed to come out December 30th, but the number 7 is now going to come out January 20th. And it looks like we'll have a different artist, at least on this issue, because it looks like we have Minkyu Young. And then, of course, the cover by Joshua Swabby is what we see here. So it's going to be fun. Although it should be denoted, it looks like, because I do believe that we will be getting, I think Ray Anthony Hyde is going to be back along with Robert Gill on Dr. Aphra number 8 in March. So I think.
Right, because we've got to wait two months till the next one and then another 2 months after that. So yeah.
Oh, you know, it'll be worth the wait.
It will be. Always is. Always is. So yeah, a couple of really good books this month. You can't go wrong if you have to pick up one. You can't go wrong with either one. But this Aphra, like I said, this Aphra story is going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, definitely so. Very much so.
So what do we have for next week in the first week of the official Christmas season?
We got nothing. There's no book scheduled for December 2nd.
No books at all. Well, we'll have to come up with something to talk about.
I'm sure we might be able to.
We'll figure it out. Or maybe we'll just take a bit of a week off.
No, maybe we'll get somebody to join us and we'll just talk about a random Star Wars issue. It'll be fun.
Oh, yes. Let's do that. All right. So that will do it then for this edition of Star Wars Splash Page. Until next time, I'm Jeff.
And I am Matt.
May the Force be with you.
Always.
The Star Wars Splash Page theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
Stop peeing!